You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today, the Environment Report and Stateside launch a week-long series on the chemical group known as PFAS. Michigan is a leading hotspot in the list of states with sites known to be contaminated by these per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS. Human studies suggest PFAS exposure is linked to some cancers, thyroid problems, higher cholesterol, and other diseases. So this week, we'll try to answer your questions about this group of chemicals being discovered more and more through our state. Questions such as, what are the effects of a lifetime of exposure to PFAS? Should people in contaminated areas trust their water? And who is legally liable to pay for PFAS cleanup? Joining us first is a Michigander who has a very personal perspective on PFAS, attorney Anthony Spaniola. Welcome to Stateside.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So to begin with, tell us how you've been affected by PFAS contamination.
My family owns a cottage, a Northern Michigan cottage on Van Etten Lake in Oscoda. And we learned in late 2016 that we were in what they call the zone of concern for PFAS contamination from the former Wirt Smith Air Force Base.
And so when you learned that, what happened then?
Well, when I learned that, we received a communication that we should come to a meeting. And I did some research before coming to the meeting to find out the background on these chemicals. And I had some background. My father was in the state legislature and sponsored legislation that dealt with the PBB contamination back in the 1970s. And so I knew from that experience that the federal level tends to run high. And so I immediately dug in, looked to see what the research was out there, had a hunch that if it was the same, that we should be on the alert. And I was not surprised to find that, in fact, there was research showing that the federal, they have a lifetime health advisory of 70 parts per trillion, appeared to be too high. There was a study that was done by a Harvard professor in 2013 or 14, in which he suggested, he did a study on the population in the Faroe Islands, in which he suggested that it shouldn't be any higher than one part per trillion because of impacts on children, their developing immune systems, and pregnant women.
Quite a change from 70 parts per trillion.
Yes.
I want to go back a little bit and rewind the clock. Tell us a little more about this involvement you had with the PBB crisis. So you've seen Michigan environmental contamination problems.
Yes. Well, I had a front row seat because my dad sponsored this legislation that was fairly controversial at the time. It ended up being enacted. But I had the opportunity to go meet the farmers who were heavily exposed. And it was a very moving experience. And I also had the opportunity to see how the state and the state bureaucracy reacted, which was very troubling to me as a young man, and it still is today.
How so?
Well, I remember very vividly attending hearings up in the Traverse City area. Farmers would stand up and talk about how they were impacted. They had just incredible fatigue, incontinence, just a whole host of just awful things. And I remember the bureaucrats from the health department and the agriculture department basically telling them it was all in their heads. And I specifically recall talking to one farmer outside of the hearing, and he showed me his elbows. He had these big masses of something around the elbows and then around his knees. And he looked at me and he said, "This isn't in my head." And I said, "I believe you." And it took, it was a very bruising, difficult battle against the bureaucracy at the time. The governor at the time, Governor Milliken, ended up disregarding his bureaucrat, finally saying, "Hey, we've got to do something. We need to be more proactive." And my father's bill, and after, again, I got to meet the scientists, which was another incredible experience, and to learn about how these types of contamination problems are dealt with, reacted to. And then I went off to college and studied for a year. So it was really an experience that shaped my view of a lot of things in life.
And just for history, your father was?
My dad is Representative Francis Spaniola from Corona.
And what did that bill that he was able to push through do?
His bill set a state limit that was much, much lower than the federal limit. Ended up, they had to euthanize a number of cattle, reimburse the farmers for that. The idea was to do the best we could at the time to clean up the Michigan food chain.
So let's talk about when you attended PFAS meetings in regards to the contamination in your property in Oscoda. Did you see similarities?
Well, the first meeting I went to, I was really encouraged. I heard we're going to be really proactive. The limits, limits are the wrong word. The guidance that we have may change, and so we want to be ahead of the curve. In fact, I was quoted in the Oscoda paper as saying, this is different from PBB. It looks like we're really on top of things. That view didn't last very long.
And why is that?
Once it became apparent that the problem was beyond Oscoda, that it was beyond the Air Force and the military, that it might impact businesses and industries throughout the state, it was like we hit a brick wall. And it was very, very disappointing, frustrating.
Describe the change. When you say hit a brick wall, how did things change?
Well, I'll give you an example. Yeah. At the first meeting I attended, I asked a question about this Harvard study. I said, you're talking about this 70 part per trillion limit. What about the Harvard study? And the folks from the health department really didn't have much of an answer. But to their credit, they came up to me afterwards and said, where did you hear about this? And I told them, and I said, I'd be happy to send you the information. And they said, great, please do. And I emailed them the link to the study. I also emailed them information about actions that have been taken in New Jersey to set a provisional standard at 40 parts per trillion. And New Jersey actually has now set a permanent standard much lower than that. The state of Vermont was setting a standard at 20 parts per trillion. The trend was clearly down. And so they told me that they would review the Harvard study and would be back to me in 3 months. Well, I didn't hear back from them in the 3 months, and contacted them again and said, just checking in. And they said, well, we've had other more high priority items come mm-hmm. about, and so don't really know if or when we're going to look at it at all.
And this is the State Department of Health and Human Services?
Yes.
Not the local
no.
health authorities?
No, State Department of Health.
If you just joined us, we're talking with attorney Anthony Spaniola, whose property in Oscoda was found to be within the area of concern with PFAS contamination. His personal experience with Michigan environmental contamination crises also dates back to involvement with his state lawmaker father responding to the PBB crisis in Michigan. You attended, Tony, the Senate hearing on PFAS last week in Washington.
I did.
What'd you hear and what were your impressions and were you satisfied or not?
Well, no, I'm not satisfied. I heard from the Department of Defense and the EPA really the same thing that we've been hearing all along. Lots of platitudes. In Oscoda, we've been at this for 8 years now in the community there. They first discovered it in 2010, and we still today, there's no plan to address the plumes that are migrating from the former base into the Osawa River into Van Anten Lake, and those two water bodies flow right into Lake Huron, which is within walking distance of my place. So, and Lake Huron is a source of municipal drinking water for, you know, lots and lots and lots of people. So when I hear the Air Force and the Pentagon saying we're cooperating with local communities, that's in Oscoda, that's just not the case. We have not seen really much of any progress there.
Could this response, state, federal, with the EPA and the Defense Department, could this be a blueprint to handle PFAS, or should it be a blueprint of what not to do?
It's a blueprint of what not to do. It really is. Just at the state level, we're doing a little better now than we were before. But as many of your listeners may have heard, a fellow named Bob Delaney from the DEQ issued a report in 2012 entitled Michigan's Contaminant-Induced Health Crisis, based on his findings in Oscoda, urging the state to engage in a full-court press to address this issue. Unfortunately, it was suppressed, and it didn't come out until Mr. Delaney went on the radio with his attorney last October. So that's at the state level. At the federal level, goodness, I think the problem there is that it's such a big problem because it's at so many bases around the country that the Department of Defense just doesn't want to spend the money. And they don't want to go to Congress to ask for it, which is an even bigger problem. So we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Let's circle back to Lansing. What do you feel the state should do next to address PFAS contamination?
I think the first thing the state needs to do is to have an honest conversation with the citizens of our state, to let them know that this is a major and significant problem, that it impacts virtually every corner of the state. Bob Delaney in his report stated that if you test groundwater in Michigan, pretty much anywhere, you're going to find this. It's in all of the Great Lakes. And it's time that we mobilize the public to ask their legislators to appropriate sufficient funds. The state departments right now are woefully understaffed. We have an emergency hotline at the DEQ. If you call that hotline, you will likely get someone who will take the report, but there will be no action taken in most cases. So we need to change the mindset. The mindset going into this and for over the past several years has been, let's just sweep this aside, sweep this under the rug. Let's not make a big deal because we don't want to alarm people. And what ends up happening is that people find out. And then they become not only alarmed, but maybe panicked, and then very distrustful of our folks who are supposed to be looking out for them.
Well, when you talk about what happened with the PBB crisis, it also echoes what happened in Flint.
Yes, it does. And I remember reading, I think it was in Crane's, a recommendation at the time of the Flint crisis that Governor Snyder should reach out and talk to Governor Milliken and find out what lessons might be learned from PBB. I wish that would have happened, and I wish that would have happened for us here, too.
Attorney Tony Spaniola, a Michigander who's experienced environmental crises and Michigan's response from both sides, the PBB in the 70s and now PFAS contamination at his Oscoda property. Thank you so much for your unique perspective.
Well, thank you.
And a couple quick notes. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality has not responded to our interview request to discuss Michigan's ongoing efforts to find and clean up contaminated sites, as well as its review of current regulations. And today, Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint sent a letter to the Trump administration inviting the EPA to visit Oscoda when agency officials tour Michigan later this month. That Michigan stop is part of the EPA's national tour of communities affected by PFAS.